I didn't know what was going on. And for dinner that night, I'd had a meal that I was just like, oh man, yeah, it was probably that fried fish and all those French fries. I was like, this is the worst case of, you know, heartburn I've ever had in my life.
This is TBI, Talking Brain Injury from Brain Injury Alliance Colorado. I'm your host, Phil, a four-time recipient of brain injuries I don't even remember, plus a whole bunch I maybe do remember. For just the second time on this show, I talk with one of my BAC mentees, Calder.
It was a grand mal seizure, and it did some pretty serious physical damage. Something like 5 vertebrae and I think 3 ribs that I broke.
He's barely a year out from a brain tumor and the emergency surgery that changed the course of his life.
The surgery itself was weird. They had to wake me up to make sure they weren't scooping out actual parts of the brain. They asked me a bunch of questions, like count up to 100 from 1, count down to 1 from 100. Then they asked me to talk to them about what I like, and I don't know, me just being the way I was just like, I like history. How about you guys? While somebody's fishing around in my brain with what I imagine is like a sharpened spoon.
Today, Calder is improving. He's back to walking. He's trying to get back into the workforce. He's helping friends and family with projects. And he's getting back to playing Magic the Gathering. It's a card game that he's loved for ages, which has quietly become a form of rehab. What follows now is my in-person talk with Calder from his home down in Denver. Remember, my guests are here to share stories of their experience with TBI and what's worked for them. Contact your doctor for treatment that's best for you. Don't forget, coming up September 7th, it's the annual Pikes Peak Challenge down in Manitou Springs. You can sign up online now at pikespeakchallenge.com, and they've got all sorts of options for you. You can hike all the way up the 14er, or you can do the bar camp route, or even the in-town race. Sign up again, that's pikespeakchallenge.com, raising money for BIAC, happening this year on September 7th.
All right. Hey, it's Phil on the BIAC podcast, talking brain injury, TBI from Brain Injury Alliance, Colorado. And I'm down in Denver today for one of the first like live podcasts that I've done. And I've got Calder with me. Calder's my BIAC mentee. And Calder, I'm stoked that you invited me to come on down and we'll check out your hood.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Welcome, welcome.
Tell folks a little bit about your background, how you ended up like here in Denver.
So I had lived in Boulder for 10 or 11 years and gone to school up there and stuff. And my roommate was going to be a pilot, and so he had to move out. We had lived together for like 5 years, and I didn't have any reason to stay in Boulder. I also didn't have any reason to go until he was leaving. And a friend of mine needed a roommate, and he was trying to live closer to work. And so it just kind of worked out. So we moved together here in Denver, and he's just a couple miles away from his job.
Still living here with you, or are you just solo now? Yeah.
Yep. He does live here. He just left to go to the Springs for his mama's birthday.
All right. Well, happy birthday to roommate's mom.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys know each other before moving in, like from Boulder, or was it somewhere else?
We've actually been friends since the 8th grade. And I've lived with him before, so I know, you know, living with your friends can always be risky because you don't want to grow to hate each other, but I'd lived with him before, so I knew that we were at the very least compatible.
All right. You guys are copacetic, actually get along as roommates instead of being those friends that are better as friends than like cohabitating people.
Yeah, we figured it out.
Moving here ties directly into your first experience with seizure and what came next. So tell me, like, talk me through moving from Boulder to here, and then when you found out that you had a brain tumor.
Yeah, God, that was a wild couple of weeks. So I moved in here, I want to say the 15th or 16th of May, 2023, and, you know, got everything in, probably started living here like sleeping here on like the 17th or 18th. And then the night of the 21st or 22nd, sorry, it's a bit fuzzy, I just woke up in the middle of the night with just some excruciating chest pain. And, you know, my bed was soaking wet, and I didn't know what was going on. And for dinner that night, I'd had a meal that I was just like, oh man, yeah, it was probably that fried fish and all those French fries. I was like, this is the worst case of, you know, heartburn I've ever had in my life, and fell asleep with a drink in my hand. So lots of excuses for why everything was the way it was at 2 or 3 in the morning. And then had a bad night. But then the next night, a girlfriend came over, spent the night, and she and my roommate witnessed a seizure. And So it was not heartburn, as it happens.
Oh, man, it would have been nice if it was the worst case of heartburn you'd ever had, right?
I agree. That would have been neat.
But not heartburn. But yeah, by the very next night, they witnessed these seizures. And you'd never had seizures before in your life, or at least not that you knew of?
Not that I knew of. And then, yeah, two grand mal seizures in two nights. Honestly, we assume that they're the first one. The first thing that happened was a grand mal seizure just because of how bad I felt. Right. But for sure, the second one that was witnessed was a grand mal seizure, and it did some pretty serious physical damage. Something like 5 vertebrae and I think 3 ribs that I broke.
Did you fall? Did you collapse? Or was that just...
I was just in bed.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea. Behold my ignorance about the whole thing. I had no idea that you could hurt yourself just from your own muscle strength with seizures, because I was just lying in my fluffy bed and just shattered all those bones. I do not remember a ton from those days or the days in between that and the brain surgery on June 2nd.
Man, things happen fast.
Yeah.
They happen quick. Well, and today we're talking, it's like, you know, I'm down here in early May. You're almost at like a year out from it. It's almost exactly.
I am, yeah. It's been a strange year.
Sometimes you think of a year as a long time. When it comes to something like this, that is still like literally, it almost feels like yesterday, I'm sure.
There are definitely some days where it does, especially just because my memory is so fuzzy from a lot of it. Like, there are just massive gaps where I just cannot recall exactly what I did. So it just seems like just no time passed in between one event and another.
Anything stick out in your mind from what people have told you happened? Because sometimes, like for me, that's been the best way to piece together, you know, the two gnarlier brain injuries that I had. Well, 3 of them is people telling me, well, this is what happened. This is what went down.
In regards to the event itself, or like the post surgery.
I'm thinking more like, so that second night when, like, you know, night one, you knew something was weird. Second night, people were around to actually see you have your seizure. You know, what did they tell you about that? Like, I mean.
So it was girlfriend Christy and roommate Lewis. Christy had already been awake before me. And then she said, suddenly your breathing really changed. And she looked over and she saw me having a seizure.
Yeah.
Doing something she had never seen me do before. And she immediately just freaked out because I wasn't, you know, responding to words or touch or anything. And just every single muscle and nerve in my body was firing. She goes, she wakes up Lewis. They immediately call an ambulance. My apartment complex, as you've just experienced, is kind of a maze. And so Lewis went out to kind of try and help him in. I think I came to the paramedics, like trying to like push me back down because I was trying to get up. And apparently I had been somewhat conscious before that. And I was just like, don't call an ambulance, which in hindsight was maybe a little bit stupid.
Glad that nobody listened to you.
I agree with that. And yeah, the paramedics assumed I was having alcohol withdrawal. And so they were asking Christy and Lewis all about, like, how much has he had to drink? Like, all this stuff. And they were just like, nothing. He's had nothing to drink. And I'm like, oh, this seems like a alcohol withdrawal. And then, yeah, then I got rushed down to some hospitals. And at the time, I did not have health insurance because I was 31. What could possibly go wrong? And some blessed angel there somehow forced me onto Medicaid. All right. In the hospital, so that I haven't had to pay a dime. But I don't remember a ton of those trips, but eventually some doctor came in and sat down and had a very, very interesting look on his face. And I was like, uh-oh. And I don't know. You just ask some questions, and I think I asked him, I said to him, it seems like you're tiptoeing around the word cancer. He goes, you have a mass in your brain that is not supposed to be there. The word. That's fantastic news.
And no warning signs about this thing beforehand either. That's the other strange part, is that there was hardly any indication that the tumor had been growing. They can't even say how old the thing was.
Yeah. They said it could have been growing for 2 years or 10 years. And yeah, they said the biopsy wasn't going to give him an age. So that's just a mystery. Like, who knows how many of the other little problems of life I've been dealing with can be attributed to that thing.
Oh, man. But then 2 weeks later, you were having surgery.
Yeah, I think it was like 11 days later. On June 2nd, I was having brain surgery. And yeah. It's pretty wild, 10 days. I don't remember a ton of details from them, but I do remember, obviously, contemplating death pretty continuously. And, I don't know, trying to come to grips with that possibility before having brain surgery, because, I don't know,
Who in their right mind, who in their life ever thinks, like, yep, someday I'm going to have to prep myself for brain surgery? Especially at 31 years old. I mean, like, it just...
Yeah, and I don't know. There was a part of me that was just kind of... I was like, all right, I've already drawn one really bad card from the deck at an age that I really, really shouldn't have drawn it. And I realized it's just kind of ridiculous, like, I guess, in hindsight. Like, no mathematical evidence. But I was like, I feel like the chances of me drawing another good card, like surviving this, probably pretty low. So we should probably just come to grips with the possibility of death.
Oh, man.
Before doing this this surgery thing. And yeah, the surgery itself was weird. They had to wake me up to make sure they weren't scooping out actual parts of the brain. They asked me a bunch of questions, like count up to 100 from 1, count down to 1 from 100. Then they asked me to talk to them about what I like, and I don't know, me just being the way I was just like, I like history, how about you guys? While somebody's fishing around in my brain with what I imagine is like a sharpened spoon, and they're like, well, really, we're just trying to hear what you like, you know.
I'm just trying to be nice, guys, have a conversation with you. I mean,
that was not the time.
We were just sitting down for dinner. No. Yeah, like, I remember the first time you told me that. That is one of the wildest parts of... I mean, I know nothing about brain surgery. I don't think most people do, right? Like, there's not, like, a book out there, like, are you ready for your brain surgery? Here's what you need to know. But that they will actually wake you up as they are inside your head and talk to you. I mean, that's...
I was
out of this world.
I was pretty stunned when they said they were going to do that too. And then they explained it to me, and I was like, I guess that makes sense. But I like came to in a room with like, there had to be like 7 to 10 people. And, you know, just, I guess, anesthesiologists standing around and like other people doing this and doing that. And I was just like, this is very strange, because I couldn't move anything except for my eyes and my mouth. Like, my head was like clamped, and then they just started asking me questions, and I'll never forget this, because it was just, they were showing me flashcards, you know, just black images on a white background. Like, what's this? Oh, it's a chair. Oh, that's a ball. Oh, that's a house. Oh, that's a butterfly. And then they held up one that I knew what it was. I knew for certain what it was, but I literally couldn't think of the word. Because who keeps accordion just sitting at the front of their brain? Like, it's not everyday lexicon, but like, I recognized it. musical instrument, play the keys, use his air. And I was just staring at him. I was like, guys, I know what that is. Like, I can't, I'm having a brain fart while I'm having brain surgery. Like, I'm serious, you guys. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong, but I cannot tell you what that's called.
Oh, man. That is, I mean, it's wild. And I'm sure there's some people listening to this podcast that have either had experience with this or heard of it. And, but it just blew me out of the water that this is where you found yourself 2 weeks after having a seizure, that less than 2 weeks after having a seizure, that you had no inkling at all was on its way. Just a, like you said, a wild, insane stretch of days there in May 2023.
Yeah, it was some rotten luck.
One good piece of luck, like you said, with Medicaid, able to actually get yourself on insurance so that you were able to make this happen.
Yeah, I had nothing to do with it. It was some, you know, gentleman and a scholar at the first hospital I went to, who was just like, what's his insurance? And they're like, I was like, I don't, someone answered for me. Maybe I answered, I don't recall, but the answer was nothing. And they're like, okay, we'll go back. And he just somehow got me on it. Which is, the dude's a saint, because everything that's happened since would be financially crippling.
The sort of hole that nobody ever digs out of. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even going back to, like you said, you know, those memories people have shared with you from like when the ambulance arrived, like you kind of see where they were coming from. More often than not, they're dealing with somebody going through some sort of withdrawal or addiction, you know, like side effects or whatever. It just goes to show just how rare and unexpected and just kind of bizarre this entire situation was for you, that I don't even think an ambulance driver has seen something like this before in their life.
I imagine not. There was a time in the couple of months afterwards when I actually heard that piece of information, and I was very resentful of, I was like, those guys suck, assuming I'm having some kind of withdrawal. And then, you know, a number of months later, as I was just kind of thinking about it, I was like, actually, you know, I didn't know I had a brain tumor either. Like, right. You know, can't really expect them to, you know, expect something that no one thought.
Yeah, maybe in the back of their heads, they're like, oh, this is one of the best, like, you know, put together junkies I've ever seen. This guy's looking great. But I don't have any other explanation for this right now. Yeah, it's great because, you know, I think back to, like, you know, the stories people have shared with me from mine. So, like, you know, I ran into a tree out snowboarding doing 35, 40 miles an hour. And I myself don't remember anything about, you know, probably 2 to 3 days in there. But a buddy of mine tells me, he was like, yeah, man, you kept trying to stand up. And I couldn't because, you know, I had a broken leg. He's like, you kept trying to stand up, kept trying to, like, walk out of the hole. And he was like, Phil, I thought to myself, like, you just hit a tree harder than I've ever seen a human hit a tree. There's no way you're standing up. But he was like, but if you do, I'm going to cheer for you as soon as you stand up. I didn't get any cheers because I never actually got to my feet. But, you know, one of those just crazy stories where, like, I don't remember that. I can't imagine how much that must have hurt trying to stand on a broken leg. I sure as hell never got up on my feet again.
I wonder if that's just, like, the body's response to something traumatic is to just, like, we got to get up. Like me having brain tumors, is like my first thing was like, I gotta sit up, I gotta stand up. And you destroying your leg, body's just like, nope, we're getting up. It's like first priority, see how broken we are, or make sure we're not broken.
It's gotta be like, I mean, the fight or flight. It seemed like we wanted to fight for something right there.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, another story that I got from, so a friend of a friend was out doing like a backcountry trip, right? A backcountry ski trip. He was trying to make his way up to a hut in a snowstorm after dark solo. So there's your three things that he did poorly to begin with.
Oops.
And you know, like, you know, it's almost that rule of threes. Anytime three things go wrong, you should just turn around, go back to where you were. He decided to keep on going up. He fell down like an embankment into like a creek. He didn't actually hit the water because, you know, it was midwinter, it was frozen, but he could not get himself up out of the embankment. And through my friend of a friend, he finally did get out. But the friend of a friend was telling me, he was like, you know, at one point he said, I think I'm just going to lay here. This is the end of it. I can't get out. So I'm just going to sit here and not get out. And that mentality just, there was some like disconnect for me. I was like, I can't imagine ever doing that in a situation where, like, you know, first of all, I'm not injured. And second of all, like, I'm still conscious, just saying to myself, no, I quit. I'm done.
I agree that, oof, Galaxy Quest, you know, never give up, never surrender kind of mentality. Like,
yeah, and who knows? He also could have been suffering from, you know, some sort of hypothermia, because I've heard that's the same thing with, like, you know, folks up on like Everest.
Yeah.
When you think of the same thing, it's like, how can somebody just sit still and die on Everest when they're not injured? It's something about the cold doing some weird stuff to your brain where you're like, you know what? I'm just going to stay right here now.
So that's fair.
Again, it could be, but still, I think back to that story often about, you know, would I in that situation just accept that I cannot get up and so I'm just going to call it quits? I don't know if I could. I would try to stand on my broken freaking leg and get up and out of there.
Yeah, I would hope I could give it a go.
Yeah. Well, in these days, so you had the surgery. Talk about the days, the weeks right after that, you know, when everything was still so fresh.
I was only in the hospital. In the, you know, intensive care unit for 2.5 days or so. And, you know, on some level, you kind of hope that your doctors are like lizard people, because you want them to be just so good at what it is they do that you know that they're just going to like just absolutely dominate it. Mm. But then they, you know, then I, as I was like, getting up and like going on walks and recovering, they're like, honestly, you're lucky that you like this happened to you so young, you're recovering so quickly. And I was just like, you have never spoken to many other humans before, have you? Like, it's like, I am so lucky that this happened so young because of the recovery. It's like, I don't know that I agree with you, but okay.
Yeah, luck's a poor choice of words in there.
Yeah, so, but yeah, so I got up out of there pretty quick. I couldn't take a shower alone for a couple of days, at least. I just, girlfriend just kind of had to be there to like help me keep balance. I slept like crap.
No rest, no recovery, felt like?
Well, I had always been a side sleeper, and 5 broken vertebrae and 3 ribs.
Yeah.
I like couldn't do that anymore. I had to try and fall asleep flat on my back, and I did not sleep well for a long time. And then, you know, for months, it was like at least 3 or 4 months after, I you know, couldn't exercise at all. Walking up and down a flight of stairs would just be gassed. And that was very uncomfortable, because I mean, I'm not in stellar shape, but I used to walk like 10 miles a day for my job. Mm. And now like 200 yards would just knock me flat. So that was kind of a bummer for a long time. And then, yeah, I couldn't drive for 6 months afterwards, which was just kind of another blow, because, or yeah, it was a, it was a, a blow to my independence.
Yeah.
Much like taking a shower was, and all these things that I could like suddenly no longer do on my own anymore. And so, fortunately, there's a grocery store just across the street that I could walk to. And then, you know, promptly take a nap upon my return.
Yeah, if the walk didn't feel like a journey across America just to get across the street to a grocery store.
Yeah, it was bad.
The driving, was that doctor's orders no for 6 months? Or was that you just could not handle the sensory input of driving?
So it was, first it was doctor's orders. 6 months from the first seizure, which I guess ended up sometimes toward the end of November, I was allowed to drive again. And he said, he explained that Colorado doesn't have any hard laws around driving after a seizure. He said, mostly this is for your own protection, like legal protection. If something were to go awry and they found out that you did have seizures, they would try and, like, you know, pin it on you.
Yeah.
So his very strongly suggested was 6 months. But then as soon as I did start driving again, you know, at that point I was able to walk more than 200 yards without becoming exhausted. But now driving and all that visual input, that became the new thing that just would flat out exhaust me.
Yeah.
I would drive 20 minutes from Denver to Broomfield and have to take a 2-hour nap upon arrival.
Because your girlfriend doesn't live here, like, nearby. She's up in Broomfield.
Yeah. So, so I would, you know, as soon as I could drive again, I would drive up to her because she had been very understanding about driving down to me for the past 6 months. And so I wanted to make sure that I could drive up to her and so she wouldn't have to do that anymore. And so me trying to do essentially a thank you thing for the girlfriend just almost killed me again.
Man. Did they have a list of side effects that you were likely to encounter, or was it kind of like grab bag? Like the same thing with the tumor. They were like, I never saw this coming. We don't know what you're going to encounter now.
They had a considerable list, but there was nothing for certain that could be happening. It was just a list of maybes.
Got it.
The tumor was in the, you know, top front left of the brain. And so the thing that was, I mean, short-term memory was terrible, but also the thing that hit me the hardest that was my decision-making, which obviously impacts a lot more in your day-to-day life than you would think.
Yeah.
Like, you know, deciding to get up, deciding to, you know, wash a dish, deciding to take a shower, you know, deciding to make coffee, and then like driving. There are like, what, a million different decisions you have to make over the course of 5 minutes on the road.
Yeah.
And so that was just what was super, super exhausting.
More than headlights, traffic lights, all that sort of stuff. It is just, like you said, the input of having to decide, I need to hit the brakes now, or I need to get over a lane, or I need to watch this guy in front of me, or the guys to my side. Like, you know, when you break down what goes into driving, it's exhausting just to break down, like, what goes into driving a car, especially through a city.
I for one, certainly took all of it for granted, that there were so many decision makings involved in driving, because, you know, I just drove a lot. For my prior job, I had to do a ton of commuting. And so I've just never really thought about all of it. But then after this, I was just like, oh my gosh. It's like, this was actually a tremendous amount of effort. Or it's now a tremendous amount of effort for me. And it wasn't before, which was just a very a very clear reminder that something did indeed happen to me that was a little bit out of the ordinary.
A little bit out of the ordinary. That's one in a million out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
Did the doctors ever tell you, like, what the odds are? I know it's just like, you know, Han Solo to C-3PO, never tell me the odds, but, like, did they ever tell you how, like, common this sort of thing is?
They told me the odds for someone twice my age.
Okay.
Which I think was one in 10 million. I could be totally wrong on that number. But at my age, not a lot of people.
You're beating the odds. You are the odd.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, man. Well, but speaking of decision-making, you've been retraining yourself. Or, yeah, talk about what you've been doing. This is a cool way of getting back into decision-making and, well, trying to, you know, make peace with all that goes into deciding things again.
Yeah, so there were a select few video games that I would play that involved a lot of decision making, like Civilization V and, you know, Dota 2, just games that I used to play a lot before, and I was never quite good at, but I certainly enjoyed them. But I had to kind of force myself to play those things because it was very uncomfortable looking at screens and all that kind of visual information. But also what I did is I'm a bit of a nerd, and I had a group of friends that we all got together every Tuesday to play, you know, the card game Magic the Gathering, for those of you listening who are not nerds. But, you know, a lot of decision making in that game, you know, responding to what other people do, thinking about how best to play what it is you have, you know, what options are available to you and how do you engage with them. You know, Magic was always kind of, it was always just a fun, good time. And something I always really enjoyed, and I definitely also, just for me, recognized it as a like a physical therapy. I don't know if a physical therapy works, but it was a mental exercise. It was, you know, it was exercising the brain more than most things at the time was for me.
But in a way that wasn't debilitating, like, you know, driving through traffic would be. Because, you know, like, driving through traffic comes with that added, like, that danger element. That, like, I make a wrong decision, I could crash the car, or I could hit somebody, or somebody could hit me. Whereas Magic was, like, you know, still having to make decisions on the fly, think ahead, think behind, all that sort of stuff. But maybe without that added level of, you know, if I don't play this deck right, somebody's dying. You know, like...
I mean, yeah, it was certainly safe.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, in a game where we're all out to, you know, kill each other anyway, you know, the worst thing that could happen is something that, the you know, there's only ever one winner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you kind of accept that, yeah, losing's always a possibility, and it was low stakes losing.
Yeah. Do you still find yourself enjoying Magic, or because of that added level of, you know, difficult decision making, is it tougher to play the game these days?
Not these days.
Okay.
Certainly earlier on, it was tougher to play. And it was strange. I don't know. I've played Magic for a long time, and you know, it's just part of the game that you lose stuff. You know, people are always trying to destroy this or that you control, but I found myself getting immensely frustrated with me making mistakes that I know for a fact I would not have done prior, and so it was just tremendous frustration with myself and just like, oh man, God, we really are different now, aren't we? And just trying to reconcile whether we whether I try and, you know, accept what is the, to use a word, I think a phrase you used earlier, the new, or if I kind of push back and claw back what I used to have.
Yeah, it can be frustrating to realize, God, I suck at this thing I used to be good at.
Yeah.
At least, because I go back to, you know, again, like, I snowboarding, physical activity, that was always my PT, always my way of, like, you know, recapturing what I had beforehand. And luckily, I'm happy that I really haven't lost too much physical abilities after my injuries. But Crash Reel, it's the name of a film that's about Kevin Pierce. He was a snowboarder coming up around the same time as like Shaun White. So like the two of them, you know, like if you were looking at a podium, it was either Shaun White or Kevin Pierce. One of those two guys was always on top. And Kev had a nasty accident. Like basically he shouldn't have lived. He was training and flipped, you know, landed from 35 feet straight onto head, right onto his shoulders. And took him years and years to get to the point that he could even stand on a snowboard again. And in the movie Crash Reel, you know, they take you through the accident, his early years of recovery, and what it was like when he first got back out on a snowboard. And one of like the most heartwarming and heartbreaking moments of that entire film is when, you know, he's hanging out with all his old pro snowboarder buddies. Everybody's having a good time and they're doing like an ollie contest. You know, they keep raising the bar up to see who can ollie the highest over the bar. And he can't time a jump over a 1 foot bar. Like he just literally tries over and over and over and over again and cannot time his jumping right to go over a 1 foot bar. And you think back to the fact that this was a kid that used to do double backflips in a half pipe. And yet he can't time that, you know, that jump over a 1 foot bar. And it's been a while since I've seen the movie. I can't remember if they ask him how that felt, but they show that footage. And I think anybody who's watching it knows how they feel watching it, being like, damn, it's impressive that he got back on a snowboard, but I think he found his limit of what he's going to be able to do on a snowboard again. And I don't know. I just, I think back to that and I think to myself like, damn, you know, I am happy that I can still jump on a snowboard or jump on anything. Cause yeah, sometimes again, the new normal, just it's not even the level that you're close to wanting to be at.
Yeah. I'm still encountering new news. And I don't know, there's some part of me that's real stubborn that doesn't want to accept that it's a new, which, you know, maybe it's stupid, maybe it's arrogant, where it's just like, well, I don't accept that, I'm gonna push. But there have been some things where I'm just like, oh man, it's like this really is, I've always hated this thing, but this really is what it is now. You know, I had a brain tumor. There's no and if or buts about it, and there's no amount of thinking that changes that. So there are definitely some things I've just had to come to terms with.
What are some things you found yourself regaining though, or things that you've, you know, found like, okay, it's coming back?
I mean, you know, there are lots of different things. As I've moved out from the surgery, you know, 3 months, you know, after 3 months, I was able to like get back into the gym and start like exercising, which was, you know, something I did on a very regular basis before. And now I'm able to do that again. I spoke to a physical therapist and they were like, every day that you lie in bed and do nothing, you lose anywhere from 3 to 11% of your muscle mass. And that terrified me. I was like, because that's all I've been doing.
Yeah, that is frightening.
Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, those lazy days I've been having home. It's like, I've just been decaying.
Yeah, wasting away is no joke. Yeah.
So getting back into the gym was good. You know, getting back to being able to drive was good. And it's gotten better since then.
All right.
There was a time where frustration would just kick in really quick, and I would have just incredible reactions to things that I would have been able to laugh off once upon a time, to things that would just like, I would just be like shaking. I would be like unable to speak clearly because of just how like emotionally charged I was about something that would not have done that to me. And that's certainly gotten better. So, you know, progress is progress, I suppose.
Yeah. And I mean, so one of the things that I think I dealt with like early on too was that same thing, that frustration of, God, why just can't I get this back? Felt like I was failing myself. And then over time, you know, some of those things turned into anger with other people. And, you know, that's really when I needed to like reel it in for myself. Cause I think I was like, you know, maybe 2-3 years out, from this stuff. The first year, I felt good. Cause I felt like I was making good physical progress. I had a broken arm, broken leg, all that stuff. So I felt like I was making good physical progress. It was that year 2 and 3, I think. Oh yeah. We got somebody bumping their subs just outside the window. Good old Denver.
I know, right?
Good old Denver. but I would get like, you know, I would get angry, and I think I let myself lash out at people around me. And over time, I had to realize that I was doing that, that I was getting frustrated with myself and letting that come out as like frustration with other people. So that's when I had to reel it back in and say, all right, you know, what's really happening with you? And also give myself a little bit of grace too, you know, give myself, you know, the fact that, some things recovered faster than others.
Yeah. God. Yeah. I also found myself lashing out occasionally. I discovered after having conversations with people that they were feeling that I was different, that I thought I was being one kind of way, but it was coming across as something else entirely.
Yeah.
Which was just kind of strange, because it means that I just couldn't read people anymore and couldn't navigate social situations the way I used to. And then, yeah, there would be times where I would lash out at people, but I would also be able to typically recognize that very quickly and then just immediately be like, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I was like, this is not about you. This is about, to my eternal dismay, this is about me and this brain surgery and stupid brain tumor. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a constant learning thing. I mean, it's something that I've been working on too. Actually, this is one of the ones that is constantly on my mind is my wife, right? I met her after my biggest brain injury. So she doesn't actually know me before that massive head injury that I had. And so every once in a while, like, you know, I'll kind of joke with her and be like, you think you would have liked me more before this stuff? And she's like, well, I have no idea. I didn't know you before that. Because, you know, I'll do the same thing where, like, you know, I'll get frustrated. I'm like, oh, God, Sarah, it's not you. Trust me. It's me. Like, I'm the one who can't get it right now. Or, like, you know, forgetting, like, you know, like moments or memories that we've had or things that, like, I feel like I should know them. It's like I was talking with another person at BIAC the other day talking about how his kid or her kid is like, oh, mommy, remember this? And she's like, nope, not really. But it's not because I don't love you. It's because, well, sometimes I can't remember these things. So I tell my wife the same thing. I'm like, you know, Sarah, it's not because I don't love you. It's because I can't get it through my thick skull. You know, luckily my skull's thick enough that it didn't just pop open when I hit my head. But I do think of that often, that, you know, Sarah didn't actually know me before this. And so, you know, I've got some old friends from like middle school and high school and stuff that'll tell me, like, you know, when I see them, they're like, man, you're just kind of different than before. And I'm like, well, I appreciate the insight. Doesn't do a damn thing for me. It doesn't do anything for me, but I appreciate what you have to say. And so that's been my way around that sometimes too, is, you know, that whole question of, would I have been different? Would I have been this? Would I have been that, with or without the head injury? Whatever, you know, like I could play that game all day long and drive myself crazy. So I just need to be like, well, I appreciate the thought, but here I am now. So I've just got to roll with it, you know?
Yeah. what can you even do with that information?
It's
like,
nothing.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. You know, not a great door to a productive conversation then.
No. But then I do, you know, I write, but like, especially those friends that'll bring that back up. I'm like, hey, but you know what I remember? I remember that time you peed your pants in third grade. You remember that one? Because, you know, that way, way old memory, that hasn't gone anywhere.
It's
you know, the new long-term memory that shorts out on me sometimes, or that, you know, the 2 to 3 week short-term memory. Man, that's the one that just still kicks my butt day in and day out.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about my short-term memory that are still just definitely not quite the same. And like the names, just because I've got such a weird name, right? I always just try to remember people's names, and that is just, it's just not quite the same as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, you were telling me earlier that you used to make a point of remembering people's names because it was almost like the, you can't remember my unique name, I'll remember you, Bob.
Yeah.
I got you, Sarah.
It was maybe a little bit petty, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just done it. I've always just done it. And then at some point I just, you know, rebranded it as, you know, from being petty to just being like considerate, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I don't know though. Who knows?
Well, I mean, remembering names is, yeah, proper nouns are still my nemesis to this day. Proper nouns. I just can't remember them. Well, but kicking it even further back, now that we're riding the memory train, this isn't the first time you've had to recover from something gnarly. Tell me about that accident you had playing basketball.
So I was 14 years old, a freshman in high school, and after basketball practice, we were, you know, mucking about as youths and dunking. Or at least we were giving it our best shot. And I went up too quick and held onto the rim for a split second too long and then lost my grip. And then, you know, threw my left arm out to break my fall. And it apparently, it locked out. And then when I impacted, it was like all my weight from what had to have been a pretty serious height just all fell onto that left arm, and I broke 5 bones at once, all within, you know, an inch or two up or down of the elbow. And they almost amputated it. It was everybody was laughing at first.
And I don't know, I'm laughing right now, but at 14 years old, could you, like, I can't even imagine hearing, oh, amputation, we're going to have to take the arm, son.
Yeah, well, thankfully, at the time, I was on a lot of pain drugs. Like, I barely remember anything, and you know, at the time, I also didn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. I had no idea there was nothing wrong, like we were talking about before, I just got back up, and everybody, you know, all my dear friends at the time, they were all laughing at me because I deserve it. You know, I had fallen from a dunk. And it went from laughter to just gasps as I stood up, and everyone was like, oh.
I imagine your arm was
it was hanging, and it was several inches longer and so it's just dangling, and I do what? And just see my arm just like I was just like, it was like looking at something that, I don't know, it's weird to look at something that you know is yours, but the second you tell it to do anything, it just doesn't react. And I was just like, oh. But I was like, my body must have just pumped in so much adrenaline. I didn't feel a thing, and I was just like, it's like, this is bad.
So you even had the moment, like the friends of like, oh. Like Stretch Armstrong over here.
Oh, God.
Gumby arms flailing.
I walked myself to the, you know, the physical trainer's room where they, you know, got bandages and massage tables and like, you know, an ice bath for all the athletes. They couldn't do anything there, but yeah. I walked myself there because, and like, as I was there and just staring at my arm on the basketball court, a dad of one of the players, he was in the military. He walked up and he just took me by the shoulders. He's like, come on, like, we got to get you moving. And I was just holding my, you know, completely dead arm in my hand. And I was like, I probably just like popped it out of place, right? And I'll never forget this. He goes, yeah, probably. It's like, what are you going to tell a 14-year-old? Like, no, kid, you've destroyed your arm.
You blew up your elbow. No, son, you're doing all right. You got this.
Yeah. And surgery was that night.
And they were on it right away.
Well, because
it was nerve. It severed a nerve, yeah?
Yeah. It severed or, like, nicked the ulna nerve, which controls the entirety of the show from the elbow down. And, or as it was explained to me. And there was a surgeon that had just come on. And everyone was like, we're going to have to cut this kid's arm off. Like, the nerve is, you know, it's not going to grow back. Like, it's just going to be like a dead arm. It's like, we're just going to have to cut it off. And the surgeon apparently looked at it and he was just like, I think I can fix this. And now my left arm works with 14 screws, 2 plates, 2 pins and a wire.
That's the right surgeon in the right place at the right time.
I know. That dude's a legend.
But you still got all the hardware in there.
Oh, yeah. That's not going anywhere. You can even feel it still.
Uh-huh. Ugh. Hardware's still in there. Oh, yeah. You can still see the scar.
Yeah.
Runs and all the way up the elbow. Yeah.
Elbow just looks different too. Uh-huh.
Yeah. You look like you could, like, you know, ice climb with the end of that elbow cap.
That would be neat. But I tell you what, there, for, like, years afterwards, I hated my friends for this, but like, they could just flick me in the elbow and I would drop to my knees, just like gasping for air. It was some of the most, like, just acute pain.
God, teenagers are the best, aren't they?
Oh, no. Just, God. Bless them, but man, just cruelty. Like, they weren't even thinking about it, but, you know, and I totally get it. Like, it was just, we were just picking on each other, but.
Any lingering effects these days, you know, movement, strength, you know, that flick the elbow?
Flicking the elbow is, you gotta really nail it now. It's not just like a general, like, area that, that really kills me now. It'll kind of get achy whenever the weather's doing something weird, you know, like massive temperature spikes in either direction, or sometimes with the rain, like, it'll just get a little bit achy. But it also, like, my pinky and what is it, my ring finger on my left hand, these two fingers sometimes will just do whatever they feel like.
Okay.
Like, they'll just kind of twitch in, and it's not something I've got. It's not something I feel like I've got control over. There's also this pesky hair that grows out of my ring finger knuckle that is still, it must be growing just directly into the nerve, because, like, you can, like, if you, like, do anything with it, I can feel it all the way back to my elbow.
That's wild. That is insane.
But yeah. And then otherwise, I don't know, the hand just kind of, it just shakes a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still have a hand.
Yeah, there was no amputation.
There was no amputation.
Good thing they didn't let that first doc do what he wanted to do. He was just thinking like, all right, I haven't sawed off an arm in months. I'm ready for this thing.
The brain surgeon just had a sharpened spoon, and that original guy, he just had a meat cleaver. Yeah. He was just real pumped to use it.
Oh man, it's the weather thing, that's funny too, because I feel the same thing, because I still have my hardware in my leg and my arm from when I hit the tree. Temperature changes for whatever reason. It's always getting the like October, November, December, that's when I feel it the most. When we're warming back up, it's not too bad. It's like the fall that I feel it the freaking worst. The one thing that we don't get to do though is we don't get to set off metal detectors.
I know.
And so I always wanted to be Terminator, feel like I was walking into an airport and they're like, what's this guy got?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm packing
just
that.
Just become a suspicious character and just get to tell them some fun anecdote.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was, rescuing my little brother from a lion, and that lion just took my arm out, and here I got a bionic arm. Nope.
I also came up with more fun stories, some that were less believable than others. My favorite was always Osama bin Laden jumped out of a tree at me with a tomahawk. Not many people believe that. And then the other one was just like, I saved, a puppy was running across the street, and I just reached out, pulled it from the street, car clipped my elbow.
But the puppy's okay.
His name was Sparkles.
Sacrificing for Sparkles.
Yeah, you know me, I'm just a real sweet guy.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's funny how many, people I know that have injured themselves on the mountain, and it's always doing the dumbest shit. Right? I ran into a tree 500 yards from the base of the mountain. So I made it easy on ski patrol. Literally, they just had to walk up the hill and come and find me. Like, they didn't even have to ski to me. They just kind of found me screaming my head off and trying to stand up. And then the other time that I blew my knee out, didn't hit my head this time. That was nice.
There you go.
So that's like the bright side of this injury, was at least I didn't hit my head. When I blew my knee out, same thing. I was within 300 yards of the base of the mountain that time. Enough that I did kind of like your move where I must have had so much adrenaline running through. I was like, oh, God, I just got to walk over there. So I just shuffled my sorry self over to the slope side clinic. And went up to the doc, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I blew my knee out. And he, had me sit down, had me go back, do the, the test thing, where they test to see, if your ligaments are still intact or whatever. He's like, yep, you blew it out. And I was like, I could have told you that an hour ago, doc, but I guess I just wanted you to confirm that this thing is blown out right now.
Yeah.
It always happens. I don't know. Looking back on it, I do try to find the bright side again. Like I said, I made life easy on the ski patrollers. They didn't have to come too far to find me. And that second time, I didn't hit my head. So I was doing something right. At least I've learned to stop hitting my head.
These are victories.
Yeah, they are.
Not using your head as, the cushion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. The next lesson I need to learn, though, is no more lime scooters. Because the most recent head injury I had was a lime scooter late at night, coming back from a bar in a town that I didn't know. We were in California. I was in Venice, California. Late at night, I was probably just a little wobbly on the lime scooter anyway. But somebody came out of an alleyway, never saw him coming, clipped the front of the car, nuked myself on the head. Woke up that time. At least that time, I kind of remember the ambulance. But woke up to some some ambulance drivers around me being like, oh, great, he's finally awake. Let's get him up in there. And I was like, I don't even know where you're taking me to right now. I think, am I in Denver?
Yeah.
what hospital? I got nobody at Denver Health. And they were like, you are nowhere near Denver. You are not anywhere.
Couple states off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no more lime scooters either. I'm done with that.
I I don't mean to sound mean. That used to be one of my favorite things because I don't like Denver personally. Mm-hmm. Nothing good has ever happened to me in this city. But my brother and, you know, my sister lived here, so I would, you know, come here fairly often for family events or just to hang out. But it used to be one of my favorite things to do was to just wait for somebody to just have some terrible crash on the scooter because they're texting or not paying attention where they are or
riding doubles.
Oh man, it was the riding doubles because then you're also looking at somebody, you know, two people that have tied a knot with their bodies, and it's just like, ooh. But I was, you know, and then it's just the judgmental part of me. It's like, y'all are being real dumb.
I judge myself for the Lime scooter accident too, because, you know, the thing was like earlier in the night, I had been like, you know, showing off, dicking around, jumping them and stuff, like doing typical stupid things. It was literally a matter of time until I did not get up from one of those dumb decisions that I made. And so that's what happened. Although I'm also one of those people where, like, you know, if something hurts me, if I fail doing something, I've got to do it at least once more just to get it out of my system. So I have been back on a Lime scooter since then. It was actually after the Avs won the Stanley Cup this latest time. All the streets in Denver were still closed for the parade, right? Uh-huh. So me and my buddy grabbed some scooters and we zipped down the parade route. Nobody was out there, no cars, hardly any people. And I was like, dude, when's the last time we're ever going to be able to, like,
yeah, right,
feel safe on a scooter going through the middle of downtown Denver? And so, yeah, I got it out of my system, cleared it out, and I'm done. I don't think I ever have to be on a motorized scooter again.
You know, after I destroyed my arm, I think that probably, because it happened to me while I was so young, and because it happened to me in my, like, you know, teenage years when, you know, you're pushing all the boundaries and you're, you know, you're rolling the die on some stuff, like being generally just like a little bit more reckless and risky than usual. After I broke my arm, you couldn't get me to do, like, I switched sports. Like, I started playing soccer.
No more basketball.
No more basketball. I couldn't, really. I pretty much quit mountain biking after that, too, because just, like, what it would do to my left arm, all that vibrating, like, through the handlebars. I didn't get on a trampoline again for 14 years after that, because I was just like, nope, these things hurt people and I get hurt. So yeah, I was just like, oh man, I'm not invincible, as it happens. So almost getting your arm amputated at 14 kind of really impressed upon me how squishy I was. I was just like, no more gambling.
Anybody at that time ever tell you, oh, you're lucky you did this when you were 14, because at least your arm's coming back?
No, God. No. I mean, there were, like you said, looking for bright sides. I mean, got to miss school for a month. It's pretty sweet at 14. Yeah. And then, you know, having to play video games as physical therapy. You know, to get the muscles in my hand back functioning. Also good news at that age.
Doctor's orders to go play video games.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Very appreciative of that. Parents got me an Xbox 360 for Christmas.
All right.
It's pretty sweet. Just sat around playing Halo while they all went skiing and did all those risky behaviors that I was just not into anymore.
I'm just going to hang here and do my PT, guys.
Yeah.
I got some aliens to take out.
And that was probably about the time that I think I was talking to you at some point about, like, my style of skiing and how I was just like, I just don't like doing, like, terrain parks, no. Like, powder and blues, yeah. Like, the moguls, not as much. I think that's when that switch happened. Because prior to that, Mm-hmm. I was definitely like going through trees with my brother and would follow him to the terrain park because I'm, you know, trying to keep up with my big brother. Traditional, but I would do all those things. But after that, you couldn't drag me to it. Like, I was just like, nah. It's like, I'll just pop my skis off and walk down the hill. I'm not doing this. Y'all are stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, and like, it also comes back to the extent of that arm injury. Like, that is a full eruption of your elbow. Because I had a buddy who did something similar where, well, we were playing, you know, sumo with like, mattress pads. Mm-hmm. Sumo wrestling with mattress pads. And yeah, he ran into somebody and he just dislocated his elbow. Still, it's funny how, like, similar the story is, though, because same thing. We were all laughing and then and he lifts it up and that thing was just dangling at the wrong angle, the 90 degrees down to the body instead of up towards the body. And yeah, luckily that was just a dislocated elbow. But still, so, like, it's crazy how when the body does something it's not supposed to do, how it takes 2 seconds to realize that. There's some glitch in the time matrix between injury and recognizing the injury that I think everybody across the entire universe can feel. It's weird.
Yeah, the body goes into hardcore, like something terrible has happened. Yeah. Something has gone awry. Like pumping full of our crazy drugs that we can produce because. not ready to deal with it just now. They'll find out soon enough.
But. Yeah. They'll try to stand back up. Well, Calder, the last thing for you that I had for the podcast was like, so here you are, almost a year out. Mm. Like we were talking earlier. A year can seem like a long time. A year can also seem like yesterday. This year in particular has been, it's been like unlike any you've ever experienced. What's coming next, you know, for you? Where would you hope to be, you know, this time next year?
God, well, obviously, I don't know what's coming next. I mean, employed in some capacity or another, but there's a lot of tricky things to kind of navigate in regards to that. Because if I start making too much money, then I no longer qualify for my Medicaid, but I have to have an MRI every 3 months. Right. At this point, the next year, and then every 6 months for the rest of my life. And also if I make too much money, then I get kicked off of some of these state benefits that I've been, you know, been getting, like the food stamps thing, because I mean, just I feel like I made a lot of progress in February and March. Mm-hmm. For like my cognitive functions, but prior to that, like you couldn't get much out of me really at all. And what you could get out of me, you couldn't get out of me without me having to take a nap immediately afterwards.
And those benefits were stuff that you fought hard to get. I mean, the process, like a lot of people know, is not easy.
Yeah, I could. Yeah. So the food benefits was a lot of forms to mm-hmm. fill out. Lots of waiting on the phone. I was on hold for like 2 hours total trying to get in touch with these people. Disabilities is a different nightmare. Mm-hmm. And I've just, after a phone call I had last week, have learned a lot more about it. Because at this point, I don't know, like, I don't think I want it going forward. I would just like the back pay to help, you know, cover some of what has been a year of me really not making any money. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I could wax poetic about how terrible that system is, for quite some time, but it is not conducive to success for people. And it's probably because there are a lot of people exploiting the system, which really just kind of sucks for those of us who might need it.
And even with health navigating it, sometimes it's still, I mean, you still in the end are in the middle of the system. I mean, you know, it's like having a guide leading you through the Amazon. Sure, they're a guide, but you're still in the freaking Amazon. There's still, you know, snakes and leopards and all sorts of junk that can come out and throw a wrench in the middle of your works the entire time. It's just,
So I would hope to be in a better situation than I am currently. That's probably the easiest way to say what I would hope my life looks like in a year. But yeah, 30% chance that this thing comes back within 4 years, which means chemo and possibly this new drug that is released in, I think, October or November called Vorasinib. Which is supposed to just supposed to help with the regrowth of tumors, but that drug is still in its trials, and I don't know. I was very skeptical of taking any pills at all before this, but I can't really describe the pain that I was in after having the seizures.
Yeah,
I take a lot of pills a day to keep that thing at bay. So what's another pill? Like, this thing is coming back. If, you know, if nothing else gets me, it will be this. If a car doesn't hit me, this is coming back at some point, and it will be what gets me. So what's popping another pill right now for me?
Just a matter of when it comes back, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 30% chance that it comes back within 4 years. But you know, once again, you don't know, you know, there's no kind of certainty. Last MRI was mid-April, and there was nothing that they said gave them immediate concern, but there was something that they said we're going to keep a very close eye on moving forward. And then this doctor, this resident of my surgeon, she's great, but she might also be one of these lizard people I was talking about. Because she said, it's nothing that we're immediately concerned about. You know, we'll keep your same MRI schedule. And then she immediately starts describing to me what chemotherapy would look like. And I was just like, you guys are terrible at this.
I'm not even at that bridge, let alone ready to cross it.
Yeah. I know. Like, why are we talking about this now? Yeah. If you said it gives you no immediate concern, it's like, do we have to talk about that now?
Makes you wonder if she got nervous and was like, oh, what do I talk about next? I guess chemo.
I don't know. We're such a litigious culture here in the States. Like, she was probably just covering all her bases. But for me, with the brain cancer, I was like, why?
Oh, great. Chemo. I didn't even know that was on the table yet. Yeah.
Sweet.
Damn.
Whole nother battery of pills.
So when's the next MRI now?
July 17th.
Okay.
Yep.
Talk about how you feel when those days are coming up, when you know that the MRI is right around the corner.
I mean, like I said earlier, I don't like the saying particularly, it is what it is, but in regards to a catastrophic health issue like this that I have no control over, I summon that saying. It's just like, it doesn't matter. I have no control over what it says. Like, the results are what they are. There's nothing I can do to change it or impact it. Let's just get the test results, and if there are steps moving forward, figure out what they are and take them. But yeah, It's just kind of, yeah, it's just taking a step back and just acknowledging my complete powerlessness over the situation and getting comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Which is not a super easy thing to do, but I've gotten better at it. I've had a lot of practice at this point.
You're still standing. You're still getting up. And like you said, you're not laying down in bed, wasting away, losing that, you know, 11% of your self.
God, that terrified me.
Yeah.
God, it was like a month there where I was just in bed doing nothing but watching Netflix. And I used to go to the gym. I used to climb. I used to, you know, I used to do lots of pull-ups as part of my workout regimen. And now in hindsight, my buddy that I convinced, I was like, dude, you got to shame me to get into the gym because I'm just being lazy. He's like, all right, I got you. He was just like pull-ups every day and then pretty much whatever else. And that's all I did. So I got it to a point where I could do a lot of pull-ups, and then all those back muscles just destroyed my vertebrae. Kind of backfired, honestly.
Damn, if only I had done fewer pull-ups.
I know.
Leading up to my seizure.
If those muscles just hadn't have been as strong as they were, maybe I wouldn't have been as crippled.
Oh, man. Well, are you sleeping these days, though? Is the back, is the ribs, is that stuff giving you any trouble?
Ribs, no. Back occasionally. It's not bad. It's kind of, it's 50-50 throughout the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some nights are good, and then some nights are not.
Yeah. But back to the gym, too?
Back to the gym.
Yeah. Back to climbing?
Nope. $40 a month for a membership.
Yeah.
I had to cancel it. I've canceled a lot of, you know, extras.
Yeah.
That were, you know, what have now become luxuries that I can't really afford.
Yeah.
Climbing was one of them, which sucks, but climbing also, it was a ton of fun, but it really exacerbated the back. Because, you know, there are just some moments where you, like, slip, you know, your feet fall off and you're still dangling from your hands. And just that swinging motation on my back was really, oof, it hurt.
Yeah, that unexpected jarring movement.
Yeah. God, it was bad.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, hopefully here soon, like you said, you know, like over the next year, hoping to just, like, you know, get back to, well, employment, hopefully being able to recapture some of those, you know, those little things that you like doing on the side.
Yeah, minor part of the story. 2 days before the grand mal seizures back a year ago in May, I had to sign a contract to be a UX designer for a company here in Denver. And it was going to be, it was a job that I've been working on for years, and like had gone to a school in Denver here for like a boot camp. You know, worked on it for years. Finally got the job after applying to hundreds of jobs. Finally got the job, only to have my brain explode. And you know, they kept me on like a contractual basis to do what work I could. They were very understanding, but like, I think in the total of the 6 months after the brain surgery all the way through today, I think I've only been able to work for them. I think I've made $2,500 working for them, which is like not very much.
Yeah.
It's not very much.
Yeah.
Compared to what the contract had originally looked like.
Still working with them, or is it kind of petered out totally?
I haven't done any work for them since November.
Yeah.
I've still got a contract with them, but they reach out to me if they need work and they just haven't.
Yeah.
Which is totally fine. I get it. It's just a It's just a bummer.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, when life slaps, sometimes it slaps too hard all at once.
Yeah. When it rains, it pours.
Well, Calder, I mean, you know, like, it's been fun to, you know, get you on the podcast and talk with a mentee, somebody like you that I've actually, like, known outside of just the podcast. And of course, it'd be fun a year from now to get you back on here and re-answer that question of, you know, where do you hope to be in a year from now? And then, you know, see what's coming for the next year too.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. We'll see if the brain tumor's coming back by then.
Well, either way, I mean, we'll be staying in touch before then. But hey, remember, you know, it's the BIAC podcast. Find us, go listen to any of them. And of course, if you need some help, like, you know, navigating a lot of these things that we talked about today, BIAC, it's a great resource. Brain Injury Alliance, Colorado. You can go check them out. They got a bunch of events that are coming up too. So keep your eye on that calendar for summertime. Lots of ways to go, you know, meet up with other folks like Calder, like myself, people that you either knew as mentees or mentors or people that are just, you know, maybe you're a caregiver and you need to get in touch with other people that are caregivers. All these are great community events. Check it out again, BIAC.org. That's Brain Injury Alliance Colorado.org. Go find them. It's Phil here on the BIAC podcast, talking brain injury from Brain Injury Alliance Colorado.